Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for your time, sir. I know you must be very busy this week.
And I'm happy to share some thoughts with you. What's on your mind?
Well, we're doing the state of the core issue, and then obviously we're all aware of the events on Friday. If you can offer some thoughts on that to start, I realize that there's probably, you know, plenty of things that are still kind of fuzzy and you're trying to clarify there, but whatever you can offer would definitely be appreciated.
Okay. All right. With the events from Friday, I think, are you familiar with all the ISAP PAO releases?
I am, yes.
Okay. And you know, beyond that, you know, 15 insurgents were able to infiltrate the wire. 14 were killed. One was captured. I think the Marines from 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing 4 responded magnificently. You know, had they not done what they had done, or what they hadn't done what they did, it could have been a lot worse. And they did what Marines and sailors are trained to do. And, you know, you hope you never have to actually do, because we focus, you know, obviously on the wing, we focus on fixing aircraft and flying those aircraft in support of ground forces. But when forced to, you know, we can quickly transition to the offense on the ground, and that's exactly what happened on Friday night.
Okay, that's actually something that especially for our newspaper, it's good for us to clarify is, you know, the Marines that responded there, they were your Marines. They were Marring Marines, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, the first response was provided by the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing Marines and sailors, because we had one of the people that was wounded was a sailor as well. So, I mean, it was across the board. It was Marines out there, it was sailors, and they did a great job. And then after that, we also had a reaction force. So it's a team effort, but the first piece, the initial piece, was provided by 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing, forward Marines and sailors.
Okay. How many Marines would you guess responded to that sum total?
Oh, shoot. You know, it's hard to say, but, you know, the entire flight line responded, and all the Marines in the LSA, so that's the majority, you know, over in the living area. The majority of the aviation Marines, what do we got, minus... there's at least 1,000 Marines over there, probably more than that. But we had multiple squadrons respond. Those that were in the living area actually went to the wall that surrounded the living space and provided security there. We had the flight line, the length of the flight line. Most of that was covered with teams from the various units.
Okay. As for the wounded, I mean, I saw the numbers. As you've sorted that out over the last 48 hours, any sense for? I mean, are we looking at? I mean, we got. I assume we probably have two casualty announcements coming out this afternoon. That's usually when they drop. But in addition to that, how serious was it?
You know, we had six wounded. One was treated that night. And a couple of staples was that he was released. He was returned to duty right then. Five went over roll three. And of those, only two were medevaced out of here. And I think none of the injuries were life-threatening. And I think the main reason they were medevaced out of here was it was more of a just the time to recover. That was the bigger concern. It wasn't necessarily the seriousness of the injury. It was just it was going to take longer to recover. And it just made more sense to push them back to the States.
Okay, is that like shrapnel wounds, that sort of thing, or what are we talking for the two more serious ones?
I honestly don't remember. One kid had, you know, a banged up ankle, and I don't remember what the other one was.
Okay. I assume they probably went to the land stool and kind of the typical way out?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. As far as... I mean, especially even looking forward to kind of the forward-looking state of the core thing that we're producing. I mean, you lose, I assume, the majority of the aircraft in that Harrier squadron. How does that change the game for you? Is that the kind of sort of thing you backfill for?
I think that's one of the things we're looking at, obviously. And I will tell you, as a result of Friday night's attack, at no time did this base close down. We had rotorcraft assets airborne in support of the attack. We had them pushed out to where the normal bed down sites so that we could continue to provide support for both U.S. and coalition and Afghan forces. So minimal impact from an operational standpoint. And to answer your question, my recommendation to Major General Gurdinas is that we're going to go back and replace those assets. And I think everybody's on board with that. And, a lot of our strength, and I know you've heard this before with your background and all, but a lot of our strength lies in the Armenia Ground Task Force. And that's an important part of that MAGTAF. When you're looking at the aviation side of the house, what we're able to do here with our rotor wing, tilt rotor, and then fixed wing assets provides a level of support that I don't think anybody else out here in Afghanistan can provide as easily as we do, just because it's it's all tied together, it's integrated so well. So I think it's important for us to get the Harriers reconstitute that capability as quickly as possible and continue to support, like I said, OC Southwest and the subordinate commands.
Okay. All right. As far as, and I know you're probably sorting through this, but was visibility a factor? Like, how were these insurgents able to get so close, given kind of the wide open nature of the surrounding area?
That's under review right now. The weather, I don't think, was necessarily a factor, although, it was a low-light night, so there was no moon. And obviously, that's a bit of a challenge, but they're doing an after-action review right now to try and answer that question.
Okay. All right. I guess moving on to the topics that we were already kind of looking to discuss with you. Obviously, it's a time of transition unrelated to Friday's events in terms of the drawdown, in terms of kind of, shifting gear to security force assistance. On the wing side, how have things changed for your folks over the last 6 months or so?
We've downsized just like everybody else. We had to take some cuts across the ACE, and we've gotten a little bit smaller. And I think you're familiar with the 53Ds, and we closed out that chapter in Marine Corps history, correct?
I'm sorry?
Are you tracking on the CH-53Ds?
Yes.
We have retired the last of the Ds?
Yes, I am.
Okay. That last unit, they flew their last combat mission on I think it was Thursday the 16th of August. And today, as a matter of fact, the last two aircraft left for Arizona. So we're not going to replace those aircraft. And, that's left a hole out here, but we've got ways to mitigate that. They were doing some great work for us, but it was time to close that chapter in Marine Corps history. And the Ugly Angels of HMH-362 did a great job. So we're going to have 12 less medium-lift aircraft on the field. And in addition to that, we scaled back just a little bit on a couple of other assets. But I will tell you, we've got what we need to do. We've got the aircraft out here, both with lift and with a rotary wing cast and shortly with a fixed wing cast, to do what we need to do to support the security force assistance mission. There are things we're going to have to do and that we've been doing and we're going to continue to do for the Afghans that they can't do for themselves right now. And an example would be the medevac. We'll continue to do that if air is required, because they do have a surface capability. But if air is required because of the length of the transit from the point of entry to the hospital, we'll provide that like we've done in the past. I think we'll be involved in some resupply. There are certain instances where we'll have to do logistics support. And we'll continue to provide air-delivered fires and assault support to lift, and we'll also do some ISR. And we're going to do that, in support of the Afghan ground forces to allow the Afghan Air Force to continue to build and add capacity.
Sure. In terms of coordination, you're coordinating with a Marine unit that, or you know, a Marine ground unit. That's common. I assume now in some cases, and probably even more so going forward, you're going to be coordinating with the Afghan units. I realize there's the Security Force Assistance Teams in those units. How's the coordination working in terms of getting that support out there when they need it on short notice?
Right. You know, we're going to, well, for one, we'll work through Task Force Leatherneck, you know, who owns all the Security Force Assistance Teams. And really, that's going to be our primary interface, is from the Security Force Assistance Team back up to RCT-6, led by Colonel John Schaefer, you know, who's nested under Task Force Leatherneck. And that's really how we'll do the interface. And, you know, we've all watched for, I've got an integrated watch for here that has got a British watch officer, you know, senior watch officer, as well as two U.S. Marines that are leading teams. We got an integrated watch for, and we're in constant communication with RC Southwest, as well as Task Force Leatherneck and Task Force Helmand, for that matter. So we've got good connectivity. And whether the Afghans are asking for support or it's one of our coalition partners, you know, that are on the ground, we can easily adjust. And I really don't think that's going to be a big issue. You know, that the Security Force Assistance Teams are going to allow us to have that interface to do the coordination we need to do to support the troops on the ground, regardless of what uniform they're wearing.
Sure. With the drawdown, you had assets in Kandahar. You got assets at Bastion. Is that still the case, and will that still be the case going forward?
No, we've a couple of months ago, in anticipation or in as part of the drawdown from 12-1 to 12-2, we brought the Harriers and the KC-130Js over here to Bastion Leatherneck.
Okay. All right, so there are no squadrons at CAF anymore.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and we did that for a couple of reasons. That helps with the command and control piece, and it also helps. It makes it a little bit easier for us to integrate both those assets into a lot of the operations, because everybody's co-located. It makes it a lot easier for the planning.
Sure. And is that possible, I guess, in part because of the way that Bastion's kind of been expanded over the last year or two?
Exactly. That's exactly what that was a big part of that. We had to do, you know, you had to allow the infrastructure to mature a little bit more so we'd have the ramp space to do what we needed to do. And that's an accurate observation.
Okay. All right. I guess major muscle movements going forward as we hit fall, winter, and then early part of the spring. I guess what would you forecast as kind of the overall shift for 3rd MA?
We're not as busy as we were, and I think that's mainly because the size of the ground force is smaller than it was this spring. And when we first got out here, we were really busy. And that's why I say I'm confident that the size of the ace that we've got for 12.2, I think it'll most likely endure into the next rotation under Major General Miller and Brigadier General Thomas. So I think we've got the forces we need to provide the support. You know, the same level of support we provided this spring, we're going to be able to provide this fall into next spring. And we'll take a look at it, you know, as we grow into the Security Force Assistance mission a little bit more. If there's something that needs to be tweaked, we'll obviously pass that on to the group that's coming in behind us. But I'm confident that we're right-sized to do the mission that we've been assigned based on the assets we've got available right now.
Okay. With Delaram, Delaram kind of coming to a close at some point, how does that change things for the wing side?
You know, I don't think that's going to have much of an impact because, you know, we're all the AOs the same size. You know, our responsibilities, things are shifting around a little bit, and we're going to transfer that base to the Afghans. And so they'll be responsible for that. I don't think it's going to have a major impact on us because we'll actually have you know, come out of there. Right now, they're able to do their own medevacs out of there. I don't think it's going to be a problem. And I don't think it's going to be a challenge for us either.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your time. I guess to wrap, could you characterize a little bit what you saw and heard Friday?
Let me think about that for a minute.
Sure.
The characterization, and I touched on it earlier, I think the aviation Marines, every Marine's a rifleman. I mean, that proved itself true on Friday night. We did something on the aviation side of the house that, you know, we normally focus inward towards the flight line, fixing and flying those aircraft. And, when we came under attack, I think the Marines and Sailors demonstrated some serious resolve when they turned to, and they quickly repelled the initial portion of the attack. I think it was, the leaders were calm, and they responded appropriately. We had good communication throughout the entire evolution with every squadron commander. And although the Taliban will lead you to believe that there was a major success, I think they really had limited success in the fact that they never had a very minimal operational impact here. And like we talked about before, we had aircraft airborne at all times, and we were able to continue to provide the support that RC Southwest Commander expected of us and that the Marine sailors, soldiers, airmen on the ground deserve.
Sure. In terms of total length on that, from initial notification or breach to it being, you know, done deal, secure, how many hours were we talking?
It's probably, maybe 5 hours or so, but a big part of that, you know, the more intense fighting was within the first hour or so, maybe even less than that. The other piece, though, is, you know, it takes time to sweep the area and account for everyone, and that's really why, you know, 5 hours probably seems like a long time. That was not 5 hours of fighting. There was a very brief period of time where they were fighting, and then after that it was more making sure that there was no one else that was on the insurgent side that was running around the base.
Sure, and you mentioned having rotary assets in the air. That I imagine they probably played a part in that.
They did, absolutely.
Okay.